70 degrees expected tonight, clear and 37 for a low. News and information 24/7 at 541radio.com. I'm Ashley Claiborne with News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The following program is paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Now, here's Talking Health with Lisa Platt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon in for Lisa Platt again this week. Kyle Bailey, of course, Lisa Platt busy with Mercy Medical, Mercy Foundation, and everything that's going on. And so we're spending this time with County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer and Teresa Metzler of Douglas Public Health Network. Thanks for being on with us again today.
Well, thank you for having us.
First of all, Dr. Bob, let's do an overall update on COVID-19, kind of starting worldwide and working our way down to the U.S., Oregon, and Douglas County. Where do things stand right now?
All right, so I feel like we're on the Google Earth thing where we cone down on our area. So worldwide, COVID is still a tremendous issue for the world. We're now at about 2 million cases, well over 100,000 deaths. So it's continuing to spread at a very fast rate. The United States has the most cases in the world, but almost no place in the world is free of COVID. And we're starting to see big increases in the Caribbean, big increases in Central America, some big increases in Africa, all of which are really quite concerning. Europe is still having lots of cases and lots of deaths. In this country, the New York area is really struggling, as is Louisiana and Michigan. And we're starting to see outbreaks in other areas like Chicago. So we're still not over the worst of it, although it does look like Italy and Spain and France and the D.C. area is probably over the worst of it at this point. I think New York is probably just at its peak. And it still has a few really, really tough weeks ahead, but it's probably making some progress. On the West Coast, Oregon is doing remarkably well. We have the fifth fewest cases per state or per 100,000 population in the country, and only places like Alaska and Hawaii have fewer than we do. So Oregon has done a remarkably good job. And I attribute that to the great social distancing that people in Oregon have done.
And what about Douglas County? How do things look here?
Well, in Douglas County, we've been sort of stuck at 12 cases for a while. We had 2 cases yesterday and then 3 new ones today. But most of these are older cases with people who had symptoms starting in March. And some of these were cases that we found, one from out of area and such, that we found and we've been tracking down. So they're still around and there still are cases. Thank God we've not had any deaths. We still have just 2 active hospitalizations.
So as this continues, what are the health community folks, people like you and at this level and at all the various levels, what are people learning about COVID-19? I would imagine from the science and medicine side, that more information, there's more to be gleaned there as we go along.
But it really is quite fascinating. And I think the thing that's most fascinating to me is the great variability in presentation, where some people get this and are really asymptomatic, not a single symptom, that there are some people get this, have only mild symptoms. And for example, several of the cases we found today, these people had relatively mild symptoms. And then some people who just get so very sick and die. So the difference in severity of this disease is really quite amazing.
And is that sticking with what we understood originally, that are ramping up as you go along age-wise and also accounting for people with compromised immune systems? Are the older and the compromised the ones that it's still having the biggest impact on?
It's clearly having the biggest impact on that group, but it turns out that in the U.S., that a number of the people who have been seriously ill and have died have been less than 50, and I consider less than 50 a spring chicken. So to have that many young people between 20 and 50 sick in the hospital and dying is really, really worrisome.
Now, are the people in those age brackets, do they have other health issues that might weaken them in some way?
Generally not. These are not people who, the younger people, some have had underlying health conditions, but many have been not that sick. I mean, for example, the sailor on the Teddy Roosevelt who died, obviously was well enough to be in the military. And some of the other patients we see have mild things, obesity, hypertension, that are common enough that you really wouldn't consider those to be severe underlying health conditions.
Are the U.S. folks, do you feel like you're getting information shared down to the state and to the local levels? I mean, is the information flow inside the health community working?
So I think the information flow is pretty good, but I'm sure there are cases we're not diagnosing, as well as some of the death data, I think, is underestimating the number of deaths, because at least in New York City, so many people are dying at home that they're not getting a chance to do testing to see if they had COVID.
Interesting. So let's talk about, as we go along, this is just an evolving landscape in a lot of ways. Explain the difference again between COVID-19 and some of these other pandemics we've had in recent years.
So we've had a pandemic means that you have a disease that's spreading rapidly on multiple continents. The last time they actually declared a pandemic was with the swine flu in 2009. And with the swine flu, that was a relatively new novel flu that spread first in the summer of 2009 and then spread again in the fall of 2009. It was an influenza. It was somewhat contagious, but not particularly lethal. So it had a lethality rate of less than 0.1%. So it was not a particularly lethal disease, although it did spread quickly. The last time we had a really lethal, widely spreading virus was back in 1918. And in 1918, there was a flu that started Fort Riley, Kansas, in the spring of 1918. And it was bad. It was bad enough that people noted it and reported it in the journals. And then it seemed to go away. But then in the fall of 1918, it just roared back. And when it roared back, it was terrible. It spread worldwide. But remember at that time, travel was slow. It took a week or so to get from the U.S. to Europe. And yet it spread from the U.S. to Europe. It took days to get from one area to another. Now, with travel where you can go from Roseburg to New York to Europe all in one day, things will spread a lot quicker. The 1918 flu was interesting in that it didn't affect kids as much or seniors as much, and it really affected young people, especially people in their teens, 20s, and 30s. So as it swept through army bases, and you remember that was during World War I, it killed many, many people very, very quickly. This is different. Young people seem to be less affected by this, and it doesn't seem to kill quickly. It seems to have this plodding pace over the space of 5 or 10 days where people get worse and worse and worse. So in some ways it's similar in that it was pandemic, but it's quite different in the disease itself.
Over the weekend I came across I guess it would be old newspaper clippings or that would have had to have been it from back in 1918 or magazines possibly. And it was interesting, while the pictures look different because of the times and black and white, etc., there were some similarities in terms of people with masks and some of the restrictions. I saw one thing about a week ago that was for a town in Washington, and it listed all the things that were now closed and you couldn't do. And it frankly mirrored today a little bit, made me a little nervous to see it mirror today so much.
Well, I saw some of those pictures, and I would agree there was a great similarity. Now, the difference with the flu is that it has a much shorter incubation period, and with a shorter incubation period, it required shorter restrictions, as well as you did not have a lot of asymptomatic carriers. And without asymptomatic carriers, it would be easier to track down the disease. This one's difficult. It's got a relatively long incubation period and so many mildly symptomatic or asymptomatic carriers that this one is going to be much harder to track down and much harder to stop.
And going back to 100 years ago, how well were statistics kept, information, all of that, in terms of not just from private physicians, but I'm imagining that a lot of the infrastructure in the health community that you have now wasn't even on the horizon back then.
It probably wasn't this great influenza, and it talks about community burials and farmers just doing mass burials. So I'm sure many of those statistics didn't get counted. And that's why the death estimates from there range anywhere between 20 to 50 million, so a wide range. I'm sure we'll have much better statistics on this, but hopefully not nearly that number of deaths.
Now, for the tests, is the availability of tests beginning to improve at all?
So the number of tests being done is certainly improving day over day, yet the number of tests is really quite small, and the positivity rate is shockingly high. So on this kind of test, you'd like to have a positivity rate of only a few percent, meaning that almost all the tests you do are negative. In this country, 20% of the tests are positive.
Is that
which is really a shockingly high rate.
Well, is that partly because, though, the parameters for providers saying, yes, you should get tested are pretty restrictive?
Some of it is restrictive. It just means in the area, there are some areas that just have a lot of disease. So in our area, our positive rate is only 3%, meaning that 97% of the tests we do are negative. And so we're at a relatively low rate, but there are many places in the country where almost all the tests they do are positive.
Interesting. Well, watching the work in Oregon, I imagine you get a chance to see what people like you are doing in other states. Is the effort to get the word out to people, is it going on much the same?
I think it's pretty similar throughout the country. There have been some states that have been a little slower to adopt restrictions. And there have been some states that have been a little quicker to adopt restrictions. So there is some variability. I think Oregon, in retrospect, did it just about the right amount at the right time.
County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us talking about the COVID-19 situation on today's Talking Health. You did, Douglas Public Health Network, maybe not you specifically, continued to do the testing clinics. How have those been going?
Those have been going great. We've gotten so incredibly good at them that they become almost a little boring. So we've done now 10 of those, 8 here in Roseburg and 2 in Reedsport area, and we're able to get patients through in just 2 or 3 minutes. So it's really quite fast, and it's a quite uncomfortable test, but we've done a really good job in getting those turned around.
And are you hearing from other parts of the state that people are adopting this model for testing as well?
We are. We saw over the weekend that the state put out a briefing on how to do it. And so I think other places in the state are going to try and do it. In most other counties around here, the testing has been done not by public health, but by the local hospital system. In Douglas County, we've done about half the tests, and the other half the tests have been done by clinics, workplaces, and the hospital.
Well, and of course, every county, every area has got different dynamics, too. You talked before about keeping them mainly in Roseburg and then over at Reedsport to account for the coastal folks. But also, you have counties where people are, there are less people. They're less densely populated. That was what I was going for. And so trying to do organized tests when people are so spread out might be hard, too.
Well, it is hard, especially in those counties that are large geographically with very small numbers. Although I will tell you, most of the disease in Oregon has been in the more populous and more densely populous counties.
And do you feel like the we're going to continue? I mean, it's Multnomah, Washington, Clackamas, Marion. Those have been every day, it seems like, on the report. Those are the four counties that are leading, meaning they have more new cases than others. Or is that partly due to more tests going on in those areas?
Those areas are doing a lot of testing, but not significantly more than we're doing here. I think there's just a lot of disease in those areas. We get to look at the outbreaks every day, and today there are about 10 outbreaks in those areas where now you're starting to see clusters in workplaces and clusters in cafeterias and clusters in nursing homes. We, thank goodness, have not really had that.
Got to take a break on Talking Health. More when we come back. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us. In for Lisa Platt, I'm Kyle Bailey. 420 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Back in 2 minutes.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Beautiful day. Sunshine 67 degrees right now, 423. The afternoon report at 5 with Douglas County's news team. Keep your radio here and keep checking 541radio.com, the 541 Radio app, and the KQEN Facebook page as we keep you updated with all the information you need, focusing on the county response and the county efforts regarding COVID-19 again this hour. Of course, Lisa Platt off today, Kyle Bailey doing Talking Health, and County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. All right, I want to go in depth here for a bit in this segment about social distancing. It was a term that most of us had never heard 6 weeks ago. It's made profound changes for a lot of different aspects in life. I guess, first of all, explain from a medical perspective why you feel like social distancing is important.
Well, social distancing means staying apart from somebody else who could spread respiratory droplets. We generally think that 6 feet of social distancing is adequate to protect you from respiratory droplets. And so staying 6 feet away from other people really does decrease your risk of getting disease. We did a little YouTube video the other day called Mythbusters thing, and we looked at using spray paint as the analogy to human droplets, that really after a few feet, what happens is droplets fall to the ground. And so staying 6 feet away can tremendously decrease your risk of getting respiratory droplet disease.
And for social distancing, when you just lost my train of thought. Here we go. Okay. What is and isn't social distancing? That was what I was going for next.
So what isn't social distancing is sitting next to somebody on a plane. You're there about 17 or 18 inches apart. You know, they're talking on you, breathing on you, doing all those things, and you are sharing some respiratory droplets. So the person next to you, certainly if they're symptomatic or if they're an asymptomatic carrier, you could get whatever disease they had. So again, it's about how far you are apart from a person, how long you are close to them, and how many respiratory droplets they're sharing. So imagine going to a Blazers game, which is another one I frequently say, and there are people all around you, all within 18 inches or so, everybody yelling and screaming. You can be sure there are a lot of respiratory droplets in the air, and your chance of picking one of those up is going to be significant. Whereas if you are in an office meeting 6 feet away from other people and nobody's coughing, your chance of picking up a respiratory droplet for them is much decreased.
You know, one of the things I've noticed lately with all the changes, I just sort of sometimes if I'm in line and I'm looking at how procedures are changing in some stores and some businesses almost daily, and then you back up after hearing your comments there and you think about all those things that in normal contact in terms of, you know, someone at a coffee stand handing you the cup, or someone taking your, you know, your Visa debit card to swipe it. All these things makes you think about how much contact until recently people certainly in the service industry and also in places like stores, but also professional folks like doctors, attorneys, and others, how much of that goes on in a given day that you probably didn't think about until a few weeks ago.
So I did think of it a few weeks ago, and there were times when, for example, I would travel, go to a music park, go to a conference where I would have over 1,000 people within my social range or my physical distancing range for a day. That's a lot of contact. In a typical day, I would have 80 to 100, and now I'm down to just one or two. So that really tremendously reduces the risk that I will get this, and certainly also reduces the risk that if I have this, and then either asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic, that I'll give it to somebody else.
And while it might be too soon to speculate, do you think once we get through all of this with COVID-19 at some point, do you think some of these changes that have been made to help people stay healthy during this situation, do you think we may see more of those than people expect become long-term changes?
They may be. You know, when Anthony Fauci says that he doesn't expect people ever to shake hands again, that may actually change that. As I was in France last year, and they did a lot of this sort of hugging and kissing stuff, that may be gone. And so we may see some long-term changes in the way we do things. I think when we do get a vaccine for this, we're likely to get back to much more normal life. But some of those things like hugs and kisses of people you don't really know, we may get rid of.
It's going to be interesting to see, and there's certainly a psychological dynamic to all of that as well. For social distancing, as you were out and about over the weekend, how do you feel like people in this area did? What did you observe that was good or not so good?
Well, I tried to go out as little as possible, but I did need to go out to Reedsport to do that clinic. And so we did get a chance to see what people were doing. I thought people did a great job. In fact, I don't think there was a single time the whole weekend where my social distancing sphere was penetrated. So I think people really did a great job. And again, you don't have to be perfect with these things. You just need to be much better than we previously were. So again, if on my worst days I had over 1,000 contacts, on a typical day I had 100. Yesterday I just had a few. You know, at a few contacts, this disease is going to go away because this disease is contagious, but it's not that contagious. So even if it has an R-naught of 5, which means that with typical activities, one person would spread it to 5 others. If you can decrease your contacts and your social distancing a lot, you'll be able to tremendously decrease the infection rate. And once the infection rate goes down and down, this will kind of die out. Now, we'll still always have cases for people traveling from other areas. There will be asymptomatic clusters that of which somebody becomes symptomatic. So we probably won't be done with this until we have a vaccine, but we may get this down to a dull roar.
I got a chance on Saturday with the sunshine. I knew I was going to be busy with some other projects Sunday, so I wanted to go out and take a walk. I ended up walking 10 and a half miles on Saturday, doing a couple of loops around Roseburg that I have kind of adopted a loop with Garden Valley, Harvard, Stewart Parkway, and Stevens, and just sort of circle on the sidewalks. I was by myself, didn't talk to anybody along the way other than maybe, I think, twice going through one of the stores and just chatting with somebody for a moment. It was interesting to watch because I saw things that would normally catch your radar as being unusual. There was a parking lot not far from a food truck along my route where it looked like two couples, just based on where they were sitting, were sitting out in the sun, probably wanting to get some sun, and I think they had gotten some food from the food truck nearby. But normally people don't just tend to sit around in parking lots to talk. But you could tell, I think a lot of people have been missing the social aspect. But they were separated, each couple separated from the other by probably 10 feet or 12 feet or more. And then I saw pockets of other situations similar to that along the way on other parts of my route. Now, I did see, as it got closer to evening, I wrapped up walking about 7 at night. And as it got closer to the evening, I did see more groups of young people probably not necessarily social distancing. I remember one scene in a parking lot, kind of like what you would typically see with high schoolers or maybe early college age folks looking at each other's vehicles and, you know, a group of about 10 or 12 people. In that case, they weren't, maintaining social distancing at all. So that was, that kind of got my radar up there. That was interesting to watch too.
Yeah, so congratulations on you getting exercise by taking a walk. We would certainly encourage people to go outside in this nice weather. I, too, took a walk yesterday, but not of 10 miles. And I think, for the most part, people do a good job. There's some people need to be reminded of this. Certainly, there have been some stories of young people congregating. And when I see them, I just say, ooh, get apart. And some of the reason we want kids to do this, they likely will not get sick, but they may have parents or grandparents that they care deeply about. We don't want them to spread it and then bring this to their grandparents.
Yeah, it's the weekend was a bit of a test, and we are still staying in a warmer weather pattern again with no chance of rain for another week, and temperatures right around 70, give or take, all week long. So people have an opportunity to get outside and enjoy the sunshine. I even noticed talking to a couple of people in the neighborhood. You know, people, you just stay a little farther apart than you would normally, and it was a dynamic to get used to. What about, you know, when you talk about, you mentioned before, for instance, your spouse or significant other that you live with, going out doing walks together, things like that. What about for people visiting other folks? For instance, if a family is pretty much stayed at home, should they have one of their kids be allowed to have a friend over?
Well, So again, that tremendously increases the number of people you might expose. So, you know, our kids live in town, and the question is, should they come over for Easter dinner? And so my son did come over. He had some work to do in the house, but we basically were 6 feet away from them the whole time, which is clearly would not have happened a few months ago. A few months ago, give the big son hug, would have sat next to us at the dinner table. And at this point, he sat at one side and we sat at the other side. And you know what? It was still great to see him. And the concern would be if I'm carrying something, I don't want to give it to him. And if he's carrying something, he wouldn't want to give it to his mom and I.
But at least there, you're in the same family. I'm thinking about people who are, you know, have a couple teenagers at home, and they let a couple of other teenagers from other families come over. Then you're kind of changing the dynamic there.
Well, you certainly do change the dynamic, right? Because now, as you bring the other kids in, they have families that they could spread it to, and their families could spread it to others. So again, we don't have the social distancing police here. But in general, by decreasing the number of social contacts or physical contacts that you'll have in a day or a week, we can knock this back. And Oregon has done a great job keeping this down. It's not going to be forever we have to do this. It's another couple of weeks until we can start to relax some social distancing things. But at least during this time, it is so critical that people follow the social distancing rules.
Going to take a break on Talking Health. More with County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer when we come back. The interview, by the way, will be a podcast available after 5 at 541radio.com. It's 434 in for Lisa Platt. I'm Kyle Bailey on Talking Health, News Radio 1240 KQEN, back in 3 minutes.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hi there, it's Talking Health. Kyle Bailey for Lisa Platt, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer joining us. Of course, all of our interviews these days via phone or similar means, just another way to stay socially distanced from others that we deal with in the community. So, Dr. Dannenhofer, in this segment, I want to kind of go in depth for a bit on the issue of masks in recent days in some locations here on the West Coast. Some stores now requiring masks if you're in them, not specifically in Roseburg, but not far away. Even the Rogue and Lane Transit districts to Eugene and Medford requiring them. Federal government last week or just over a week ago asking people to start wearing them. And I'm certainly seeing more and more of them. I think yesterday I was getting some groceries. Probably 25-30% of the people that I encountered at the store were wearing masks. First off, explain the different kinds of masks, because, I mean, not every mask is the same.
Certainly masks differ. So the easiest masks, the old-fashioned masks, were made of surgical gauze. Other masks can be homemade of cotton t-shirt material. You then get up to surgical grade masks, which are more protective, and then N95 masks, which are really quite protective. They protect against 95% of small particles entering your face. So the masks are for two reasons. One is to prevent you, if you're beginning to be symptomatic or you're asymptomatic but still contagious, from spreading the disease to others. And then they can also be used to protect you from disease. And again, our YouTube video from last week shows about those things. It actually is really quite effective in preventing you from spreading a disease while you're pre-symptomatic or asymptomatic. And so we are recommending those. And those do not need to be high-quality masks. Just regular cotton masks work pretty well for that. In terms of preventing you from getting disease if somebody sneezes on you, you really do want a higher quality mask. And that's why when we collect these swabs, we're using N99 masking systems, because we know that there's a lot of germs and the stuff that people are coughing at us.
So what are you observing in terms of people wearing masks around Douglas County?
Certainly a whole lot more than in the past. I was also at the store yesterday and noted that most of the workers were wearing masks. And I would agree about a quarter of the shoppers were wearing masks. I've taken to just putting one on in the morning, and I'm liking my balaclavas here, so that those work pretty well, and just sort of a new thing for the day. So this whole thing has taught me a lot about social distancing. It's taught me a lot about use of video conferencing and such, less handshaking and wearing a mask. So I think these are all the changes that we're going to see.
It is interesting. I mean, 4 weeks ago, if I would have encountered someone with a mask in a store, maybe 6 weeks ago, I would have, you know, assumed that they must be very ill or something like that, or were worried about catching something. But it was certainly not common, and it still feels a bit like a science fiction movie to see the number of folks that are wearing masks right now.
It really is quite a shock. Now, I lived in Japan for a while, and wearing masks in Japan was a typical thing even 20 years ago, but it clearly is a shock here in the U.S.
And for a country like Japan, why has it been more common there for so long?
The Japanese are very interesting about not wanting to show their mouth or their teeth. So a lot of times, actually, when they eat, they'll cover their mouth, and it's sort of considered a sign of humility. So it was just a social thing that was not uncommon in Japan even at that time.
And I imagine for places like parts of China and some other places, the issue there is the quality of air.
Yes, in China, a lot of people would wear N95 masks to protect against the terrible air pollution. So when we look at here, when we have a bad fire and we got a PM 2.5 rating of 100 or so and it's hazy here, that's a good day in China. Because many times in Beijing, you'll be at 300 or 400 for their PM 2.5s. So that's why a lot of times they were wearing masks to protect against the pollution.
Now, for people that are wearing masks, and you talked about the different kinds, what's the difference in terms of how you need to keep it safe? Meaning, can all masks or just some masks be washed or reused, or how does that all work?
Well, we are recommending for the general public that they use washable masks, either made of cotton or some other tightly knit material. And then they should be washed once a day. So just like my clothes, I take off one today and put them in the wash. I take off my mask and put it in the wash and pick out a new one for the next day. It's actually kind of a little bit of a fashion statement.
Interesting. And this will be probably an evolving canvas as we go with this. Do you think masks are going to be around for the long term as well?
They may well be. I think certainly that may be a change. The other change we may see is that it'll be no longer acceptable to go to work when you're sick. You know, we in this country have had kind of the ethic that, oh, I'll just work my way through it, even though I'm really quite sick. And I think we may see that change because I think we're beginning to recognize that sick people at work probably cause disease.
Yeah, it's interesting. Coming out of the recession, I recall one of the statistics from 08, 09 back in that era was because there had been such strong job loss and companies downsizing, employees wanted to be, available to work every day of the week. So they were probably working in some cases when they shouldn't be. They were also not taking off days and not using vacation time because they wanted to, the more indispensable you appeared, the better your job or the better your prospect of maintaining your job. But I think people are definitely more sensitive in office environments now when you're in cubicles, and sometimes the size of those vary and just how far apart people are in desks and all of that. Even companies that have enough space, being able to maybe space people out in what would maybe seem to some initially is a less efficient work pattern, but just to keep people physically apart from each other a bit more.
I think so. I think, for example, it was only 8 weeks ago that I flew on airplanes back and forth across the country in these incredibly tiny little places with people all over the top of you. That seems almost unimaginable now, but it was the way of the world about 8 weeks ago.
Wow. So many changes out there. One of the things I wanted to ask you about as well, you were selected just over a week ago to be on a task force with seven other public health folks from different vantage points, universities, et cetera, advising the governor about the state response. How is that going so far?
Well, we've had a couple of meetings. We have another one tomorrow. The governor wanted us specifically to help her with pinch points and blind spots. So during an evolving situation like this, it's easy to get just yes people who will tell you what you want to hear. She wanted to get a group of people who would tell her what she was missing and what she needed to do better, as well as what kind of pinch points we're going to see down the way. I don't think 3 months ago anybody would have predicted that paper masks would be a pinch point in this country. In fact, I think if you suggested around Christmas time that what I wanted for Christmas is 10,000 N95 masks, people would think you were a little off your rocker. But right now, 10,000 N95 masks would be incredibly valuable.
Now, is the governor's office or through the Oregon Health Authority, for those of you that are on this task force, giving you information to evaluate, or are you also asked to bring to the table information that you obtained from other sources as well?
So both. So they have some high-level data at the state for modeling. Now, this is stuff I've all seen before. And then they asked us to bring our perspectives from the local areas.
And how varied are those perspectives?
They are very varied. I mean, if you look at the difference, one of the people on this group is the chief medical officer for OHSU, a large urban tertiary care center. And then you have me working in a small rural public health district, public health area. So we really do vary quite a bit in the way we see things. However, what's remarkable is how much we agree.
And are you able to, I presume you're doing these meetings on sort of a Zoom or some similar format, do people pick up things from the sort of folks that have the opposite, or maybe not opposite, but different perspective based on whether they're urban or rural, et cetera?
So we're scientists, so we all disagree about things. We certainly disagree about the models that are out there, you know, whether the doubling time is 4 days or 5 days, whether the decrement is going to be even or right-sided. So things like that that scientists would disagree about are the kind of things that we disagree about. Sort of like sports fans will disagree about things. Not that you dislike each other, but it's you have a different viewpoint about things.
Now, earlier today, Governor Brown and the governors of Washington and California came out with essentially a plan to work together to some extent in a Western States Pact. And I know that's just evolving in the past few hours. Do you think it's helpful, especially where we are sort of the gateway to other countries being on the West Coast, for the three states to be doing at least some work together?
Well, it's great that we're working together. I mean, these viruses don't have a good sense of direction, and they don't know when they cross state or county borders. And so actually two of the suspect cases we've had have been in California. So clearly this is a shared responsibility.
And for the communication process, I don't know if you know yet, but do you feel, is there the potential for the health officials in the three states to be working together on some of this, much like you are in this small group advising the governor?
And I think we will. You know, if you think of those three states, we've got some really big urban areas, Portland, Seattle, L.A., San Francisco. But then we also have some great agricultural areas in each of the three states. And so how we deal with this in different areas and different parts of the state is clearly going to be a complicated discussion.
And one of the framework points I wonder about in all of this is, because the states, all three, have urban and rural areas, is there the potential for them to look at guidance or guidelines or even rule changes that would be perhaps different for the urban areas versus the rural areas?
I think so. I mean, probably you don't have to have much mass transit guidance in Harney County. They don't have much mass transit. And you probably have very different views about, for example, large homeless shelters in the cities. So I think the information that we get will be tailored to the situations that are there. What we've seen in this country, and actually in many parts around the world, is that this virus has spread most quickly in the urban areas. So if you think of New York City and Milan and Wuhan, all relatively big cities, and that's where this has spread first. Now, however, what we do recognize is that this may later come to the more rural areas.
All right, going to take a break. And the final segment when we come back, it is 4:50. Talking Health back in 2 minutes on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon 453, 66 degrees, sunny in the Umpqua Valley. The afternoon report coming up with Douglas County's news team. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us this afternoon. Talk about for Douglas Public Health Network, what are some of the things going on maybe behind the scenes that people ought to know about in terms of when you get these positive tests, these positive cases?
So when we get positive cases, we like to do what's called contact tracing. So when we get these cases, we do these detailed interviews with people to find out where they've been and what they've done, so we can find out if we need to do something else to control the disease. Now, in many cases, they've had travel outside the area before we got here. For example, they were on a cruise ship or they were in an area where there was lots of disease. And then we look to see if they've maybe infected somebody else here. And then we get in contact with those people to be sure that they are self-monitoring their health and their temperatures to be sure that if they get signs or symptoms of the disease, that they get tested right away.
And how many folks are involved in working on these areas?
So we have four people here who do epidemiology. Some of us do it all the time. Some people do it part-time. We talked to Laura last week, and this is what she's doing most of her time. And then in addition, we've hired an epi strike team. So on the radio this morning, there was a long story that the country's going to need many of these. We've already have one. And these are people who are not epidemiologists, but they're other healthcare professionals that can talk to people and sort out what their contacts have been. Because if we're going to get this under control, what's going to have to happen is we have enough testing so that we can find cases as soon as they occur. We can't have this weak turnaround time on labs. We have to be able to find them within a day or so, and then isolate them and isolate the people around them so that they will not spread it to anyone else. And what we're hoping is that within the next couple of months, that most of the places in the state have these epi strike teams, and that's going to be one of the steps that we need to do to get back to some normalcy.
What kind of depth do they go into in terms of the questions that are asked of people regarding their contacts?
So depending on what the disease is, it's different. So for example, if this was a sexually transmitted disease, we go into the nitty gritty of their sexual contacts. With foodborne diseases like salmonella, we go into a very detailed dietary discussion of what they ate and what things that they've been around. And we found some amazing things. So this last year, we had people got things from raw cake dough. And actually, it was because of an investigation in Oregon that the cake dough was recovered. Hard to believe that salmonella can live in raw cake mix. But for this disease, because it's mostly spread by respiratory droplets, we try and find everybody who's been around them within their physical space, within the days before, while they've been symptomatic, and in the days before they've been symptomatic.
And when they have these interviews, then you have to kind of look at that information and determine then that you need to talk to those close contacts then, or how does that all work?
Right. So then we call those contacts, and then we tell them about their exposure, and then we instruct them on what to do, that if they're sick, that they need to stay home immediately and get tested. If they're not sick, then to be sure that they self-monitor, and at the very first sign of illness, to go home.
And what about their close contacts and other people they've come in contact with? How far do you kind of follow that chain?
So then we typically go with contacts and the contacts' families. So we typically don't go past that because, remember, the disease is not contagious at least until 5 days after you've been exposed. And hopefully we're getting most of these people in time before they get exposed.
One of the things about this seems like a lot of folks get it, don't know they have it, so they have not made changes in behavior, and then realize later that they do have it, having already inadvertently potentially exposed a number of people to this. It seems, a lot of times you see you find yourself getting sick. How different is this from some of the other things in terms of the fact that you may feel okay, but yet you really are still spreading it?
Yeah. So there are most diseases, you're quite sick at the onset, so you tend not to spread them as much. So, for example, influenza has a very rapid, very discernible onset, and so that most people, once they have it, are not feeling well enough to go back to work. But unfortunately, on this disease, also with measles, you can spread it in an area before you otherwise know that you have it. And that's why this disease is going to be extremely hard to track down and get rid of. Now, if you only transmitted this when you were coughing like a big dog, it'd be much easier. But there are people who don't have much cough. There are people who don't develop cough until well into the disease. There are people who don't develop fever at all, or sometimes not until late in the disease. So there are a lot of people who are not quite sure what's going on, and yet they're continuing to spread. And that's why the CDC has recommended that we use face coverings. Because if you just use face coverings on a regular basis, then on those days that you're pre-symptomatic, you would likely not spread it to anyone else. So that's the reason that we recommend masks for this. We don't usually recommend masks for influenza. We don't recommend masks for other things. But because you can spread disease in the pre-symptomatic and asymptomatic phases, that's why we do recommend use of masks.
And County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, as the music comes on, we get ready to go. When's your next Facebook Live event?
In about 1 hour. So 6 o'clock tonight will be Facebook Live. That's a chance for anyone who wants to ask questions, and we'll handle as many as we can.
All right, Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, thanks for being on with us this afternoon.
And thank you for having me.
All right, coming up at 5 o'clock, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.